want to start out by acknowledging my co-authors, Nathaniel Briggs and Erwin Goldzweig. They're both at Mary Medical College. So we know that seatbelts save lives, and we're also aware that the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration does a yearly survey of seatbelt use. They do it in June when the seatbelt rates are the highest, and they're every year announcing that the rates are going higher and higher. But they only identify seatbelt rates at the state level. They don't look below the state level for any geographic variations. And we think this may mask some real variability in seatbelt use that occurs within a state between places. So we really wanted to look in this study at variability in seatbelt use at more local levels, and we wanted to understand what variables might account for some of these differences between places, and also while we were looking at this, to give us a little bit of better understanding perhaps of how primary seatbelt laws work in influencing the rates of seatbelt use. We used the CDC's Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, the BRFSS. This is a nationally representative telephone survey that's done by the 50 states, District of Columbia, and the U.S. territories each year. It's in 2002, a seatbelt question was included in the core module, so all people participating in the interview that year were asked that question. The survey identifies county data for larger counties within many of the states. It also identifies metropolitan areas within some of the states. So this allowed us to create a data set that looked not just at state differences in seatbelt use, but at county-level differences in seatbelt use. We looked for counties that could give us at least 100 data points that year. We selected 73 counties for analysis. This was a total of 93,523 individuals. If you look at the weighted frequencies from the survey, this would represent about a third of the American population. We obtained the census data for each of these counties, and using a set of 165 counties, 18 variables, we did a factor analysis to come up with a set of county-level predictors that we could use in our multi-level analysis. We ended up with five orthogonal factors, and what that means is there's five uncorrelated variables so that when we enter all five into the equation, there's no multicollinearity problems with them. This shows the variables on the left there: poverty, unemployment, the percent of whites and blacks, some income statistics, education statistics, the total population sizes, population density, total area of the county, and then we calculated something called a segregation index, which looks at the census tracts within a county. If the racial composition of every census tract was identical, it would be zero. If they were either all or none, it would be one. So it gives you a sense of what the residential patterns are within a county. So the five factors represent a sort of wealth poverty factor. A second factor that we're calling elites that represents sort of the presence of people with lots of people with high education and high income in a county. There's a size, county size factor, population size. The other one was the density of residents within the county, and the final one was a sort of crowding segregation index. Let me just say a couple comments about self-reported seatbelt use. We know that self-reported seatbelt use is like height. People tend to overestimate it, unlike weight, which people tend to underreport. But we also know that there's a fairly good correlation between the observed rates of seatbelt use, at least at a state level, and the self-reported rates. So there's some bias in it, but it's a systematic bias. So we can use the self-reported seatbelt use to study the variability in seatbelt use without being too concerned that our 80% really maybe represents a 75 percent in reality. So we're really interested here is in variability and differences between people and places. This is the question that was included in the survey. How often do you use seatbelts when you drive or ride in a car? You can see there were eight possible answers. This gives for the entire survey, this gives the frequency giving that answer and the percent. You can see that 77% said, I always use a seatbelt. Most are fairly spread out, with very few saying that they never use a seatbelt and a few not answering the question. We just recoded this for the analysis into a less than always or always. And when you use the weighting with the survey data, 80.7% of people in the survey report always wearing their seatbelt, and that would be representative of the entire American population. If we just look at the counties that we were using, it gives a weighted a percent of 80.9, so there really is no big difference overall between the counties we selected and what the answer would be if we looked at the entire survey. We also looked at the state law in 2002. A primary law, of course, is where a person can be stopped and given a ticket just for not wearing a seatbelt. A secondary law is where you can be ticketed for not wearing a seatbelt, but you have to be stopped for some other reason first. We use the Sudan statistical package for the descriptive statistics. This takes into account the sampling strategy used within each of the states, and it also uses case weights to make the estimates representative of the target population for whatever area you're looking at. For the multi-level modeling, we used a program called HLM, stands for Hierarchical Linear Modeling. There's two models. One is the level one model, which is of individual differences. We used the Behavioral Risk Factor Survey for that. The other is a level two model, which looks at area or place differences, and we used those 2000 census factor scores that we calculated, plus the state law. This is a description of the sample that I'm looking at in this analysis, and you can see that the majority were identified themselves as non-Hispanic whites, although there is a reasonably good representation of non-Hispanic blacks, Hispanics, and then people who either are multiple or other racial or ethnic subgroups. The individual level predictors we looked at were gender, race, ethnicity, age, divided into four broad categories, education and income. And then with each of these, where there was a possibility that people could not or refused to report, we included an unknown category in the analysis. This just is going to give some of the seatbelt rates by variate analysis. You can see there's a pretty good gap between males and females in reported seatbelt use. That seatbelt use differs slightly by ethnic group, that it's actually highest in Hispanics, just a very slight difference between non-Hispanic whites and blacks, and a little bit higher in this other group. You can see that seatbelt use goes up with age, and that the people who refuse to report their age look like the oldest group. It also goes up with income, and the people who wouldn't say their income look like the high-income group in terms of their seatbelt use. It also goes up pretty dramatically when people have some or college graduate, as opposed to people who finished high school or did not finish high school, and it looks like the unknowns look more like the college graduates there. And then this is the difference by the state law, and so you can see there's a pretty wide gap in reported seatbelt use depending on whether you're living in a primary or secondary seatbelt law state. So all of these things are not remarkable findings. These are really what you would expect based on the literature on factors predicting individual differences in seatbelt use. I thought you would be interested in seeing the places, the counties that had the highest reported rates of seatbelt use. The 10 highest are on the left there, led by Los Angeles, Honolulu. Cobb is one of the Atlanta suburban counties. There's a couple, three in the Maryland area here, and then Seattle, Washington. The lowest, I was expecting to find more lower counties in the southeastern United States, and in fact, the lower ones tended to be some of them on the East Coast, Philadelphia and the Boston area. There's Arkansas, South Carolina, one in Kansas, and one in Wisconsin. So they're all scattered around the country. You find counties with really very high use, and you find others that have a 30% gap here between the highest and the lowest. So for a multi-level model, you start by thinking that people are nested within counties, and you first develop a prediction model for the county, for the individuals. Here we use seatbelt use in the behavioral risk factor survey. Then you find an independent way to measure the characteristics of your place, of the counties. That was the U.S. Census data. So first you control for those individual differences. Then you create a model that shows answers one of two questions. First, how does the intercept vary? That is, what's the average seatbelt rate in each county? How does that vary? And how does that variability relate to the characteristics of the county? And the second is what's called a slope model that looks at the importance of a predictor. So, for example, we're going to look at gender as a predictor of seatbelt use, and does the importance of that as a predictor vary from one place to the next? This gives the level one model of seatbelt use. It's a logistic regression analysis. In each of these, the bluer lines are the ones that were statistically significant. You can see that medium income, ages less than 65, high school dropouts were risk factors for lower seatbelt use. Female, Hispanic, and college education were protective factors for higher seatbelt use. Again, I would think this is really not a remarkable set of results here. This is the level two model of intercepts. So this is understanding what predicts variations in county seatbelt prevalence. And you can see that two of the factors were, four of them were significant. The secondary law, of course, is a predictor, that when you have a secondary law, the seatbelt rate goes down. It also goes down as poverty increases, seatbelt rate increases with urban density, and it decreases with racial segregation in a county. This is the slope model for male. So the question here is this difference between males and females, is it exaggerated or decreased from one county to the next? And what we found was that the slope is not associated with the seatbelt law, so that passing a primary seatbelt law, it does have an effect on the overall level, but it doesn't affect the gap between males and females. We saw maleness is less important as you get into larger areas. It's less important as you have more people with high income and high education, and it's less important as the segregation increases. That would, I think, go along with the larger urban areas. I also did a level two model here for African American, and unlike gender, what we did find is that the passing a primary seatbelt law would reduce any differences between blacks and whites, whereas none of these other county level factors made a difference in that particular variable. So the findings are self-reported seatbelt use varies considerably from county to county. We can model the individual level risk factors, including age, income, education, ethnicity, and gender. After controlling for these individual differences, seatbelt rates in a county increase when there's a primary law. They increase with greater wealth and education in the county, and they also increase with greater urban density. Gender is less important in large urban areas with many people who are high in education and wealth. The primary seatbelt law has a clear impact on overall rates in an area, but it does not erase this gender difference. And then the primary seatbelt law also decreases the importance of black-white differences in seatbelt use. The implications, I think, are that state laws are very important, and we need to encourage the rest of the states to pass primary laws. That currently we have a lot of statewide campaigns promoting seatbelt use, and it may be that they're less effective than strategies that could be developed to target specific areas or specific counties, depending on the characteristics of that area. The interventions may need to be tailored to the characteristics of the place. And then I also think it's important that when we're looking at seatbelt data and we see aggregates at the state level, that we need to understand that that probably masks some fairly large differences from area to area within these states. So I would hope that there's more disaggregation of data when we're doing seatbelt research. The limitations, of course, are that we could be misled by the self-reported seatbelt use, particularly if the degree of misreporting varies as a function of if there's a confounding of accuracy with place. We need to confirm these findings with observational data. The census data captures limited differences about place, and so there may be many other things that vary from county to county that could account for these differences. We need to come up with some better ways of looking at these level two data sources. And then because only larger counties were included, this particular study may really underestimate the differences between urban and rural areas. And that was it. Questions? Yes? Well, yeah, not in this particular data set, but we're just completing a project that was done in 8 Tennessee counties where we did surveys at the driver's license stations. And what we actually found that, at least in Tennessee, which has a primary law now, that people thought the probability of being stopped for a seatbelt violation was really pretty low, and that males thought it was even lower than female. So that may account for some of the differences that people think once they're stopped, they'll probably get a ticket, but they don't think it's very likely that they will get stopped. And then what we found was that we were trying to promote enforcement in some of these counties and compare the impact on seatbelt use. And it's really very difficult to get the police departments and the county sheriffs to actually focus on increasing seatbelt enforcement. So even though they were encouraged to do it and given some incentives to do it, that we really didn't see large increase in the number of tickets that were given, which again, in Tennessee, there is no standardized method for reporting or recording tickets, so that's a very difficult set of data to get a hold of. But yeah, I think risk perception is one of the factors in the gender difference. And it may be also a factor in the Hispanic, the higher level of seatbelt use in people who identify themselves as Hispanic, that they may perceive a higher risk or perceive a greater consequence of a traffic stop, so it encourages higher seatbelt use. Yes. Well, it controlled for all of those other, the age, gender, education, and income. Yeah. So, I believe it still remained a predictor in the logistic regression model, and it was a positive odds ratio for Hispanic. We actually did a study, published a study using the FARS data, where we looked not just at Hispanic, but we looked at country of origin, and there were some very large differences depending upon people that identified themselves as Mexican or Central American actually had a higher seatbelt use rate than people who identified themselves as Cuban or Puerto Rican, and which was more comparable to the seatbelt use rate in whites, and we think that was probably a function of acculturation or sort of years of acculturation in the United States and sort of perceived differences in the risk of being stopped potentially for as an immigration issue. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. And it was speakers actually worked out quite well that we were speaker short. Perfect time. Thank you.